Kage, The Promise of Recovery. If we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a greater capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. Though we may never be perfect, continued spiritual progress will reveal to us our enormous potential. We will discover that we are both worthy of love and loving. We will love others without losing ourselves, and we will learn to accept love in return. Our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear, and we will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. We will be able to risk failure in order to develop new, hidden talents. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. We will begin to feel and will come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. As we gain the ability to forgive others, our families, and the world, our choices will expand. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of those we love to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. No longer terrified, we will discover we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. We will laugh more. Fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Can we really grow to such proportions? Only if we accept life as a continuing process of maturation and evolution toward wholeness. Then we suddenly begin to notice these gifts appearing. We see them in those who walk beside us, sometimes slowly or haltingly, occasionally in great bursts of brilliance, those who work the steps and change and grow toward light, toward health, and toward their higher power. Watching others, we realize this is also possible for us. Will we ever arrive, feel joyful all the time, have no cruelty, tragedy, or injustice to face? Probably not, but we will acquire growing acceptance of our human fallibility as well as greater love and tolerance for each other. Self-pity, resentment, martyrdom, rage, and depression will fade into memory. Community rather than loneliness will define our lives. We will know that we belong. We are welcome. We have something to contribute, and that is enough.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Terry, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Terry!
So, yeah, I am a writer fan, and that response makes me think about, I've always wondered what it's like to be down on the field and have everybody yelling at you and cheering, so that kind of gave me that that experience there, I guess. I'm not quite as pumped up as the team before a game here. I'm a little nervous, but Richard gave me a call, asked me to speak, and he told me that the topic was hope for today, and so I actually told him that I needed to think about that and kind of hung up the phone, and I went away, and I was kind of disappointed in that as a topic, because fear about tomorrow, resentment about yesterday, those are things I can talk a lot about. Hope for today, we'll see what I can talk about there. I guess I grew up in a home that wasn't actively, didn't have active alcoholism in it, but I did, there's lots of clues, I guess, that alcoholism played a part in the household that I grew up in. I married a woman who did grow up in a household affected by active alcoholism. When she started working through a program of recovery herself, she suggested that I check out an adult children meeting, and that's what I did quite some time ago back here in Saskatoon. I guess I hang my hat on the did you grow up with a problem drinker sheet that's in the newcomer package, because it's yes, 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 yes. Do you constantly seek approval and affirmation? Do you have a need for perfection? Do you isolate yourself from people? Do you mistrust your own feelings and the feelings expressed by others? It's all yes, yes, yes. So that's where I kind of hang my hat on the impact that alcoholism has had in the relationships that I have in my life. I was an active participant in adult children meetings here in Saskatoon, kind of from 96 to 99. Then I moved away, and a couple of years ago I came back to Al-Anon, to the group in Swift Current that I go to as often as I can, living about an hour away, the online meeting that I participate in, and coming to these things. So that's kind of where I'm at, I guess. How am I? How was I? I guess, you know, my life got to the point where I was filled with fear, filled with resentments, isolated. I was trying so hard to control things, to make things right, to be good enough for that. I'm sure I read it somewhere in our material, that unseen judge. Everything was a big deal, and I treated everything as if it were a big deal. So it was a life that was constantly on edge. You know, one wrong step, everything's going to fall apart. And so this fueled my own fears, procrastination, isolation, control, overreaction. All those issues, you know, were very strong and very prevalent for me in my life. So what gives me hope for today? I guess, you know, in the past, I mean, hope that was something that was very absent from my life. Everything was hard. Everything was difficult. Everything was a burden. You know, maybe talk a little bit about how it is now for me. I mean, just basically relate a very simple story or part of my life that happened exactly when Richard called and asked me to participate in the session. But I think it gives me anyway a sense of the difference that I have in my life now that I have program and recovery in place to some extent. When Richard called, I was actually in a bit of a bad place mentally. I was trying to put my three boys to bed. My wife was out at another commitment that evening. Through a series of events, I had fallen into the old pattern of starting to pick fights with my oldest, yelling at the middle one, putting a terrible scare into the youngest one, seeing all this conflict that was going on. You know, they weren't behaving the way that I wanted. I wasn't behaving the way that I wanted. I knew that things needed to change, so my first response was to force my apology on them and to force them to apologize to each other, but that didn't go very well. But that's the old pattern of stepping into and having control. And I guess what I did then is I left the room. I spent a few minutes reading from one of my readers in the bedroom and asking for God's help. And I guess when I say that and wrote my notes, it wasn't even asking for God's help. It was more a question of just being open to God's help. And I took the bit of calm that I felt from that and went back out. And I guess at that point, everybody was pushing everybody else's buttons. You know, normally at that point in the situation, I'd have been on the warpath. I'd have been looking to punish anybody who looked at me wrong. But I let things go. I could see that doing the right thing, acting with kindness, building or repairing my relationship with them was more important than being right now. And that's not something that came easily to me in the past at all. It was always about me, about how you made me feel, about me being right and you being wrong. And this time and times now, I can see through that and over that, it feels like to me, to something better. I know that God has helped me to see that, to remove that defect of character that has stopped me from being the person that He wants me to be. In the past, you know, in this little circumstance, nobody would have went to bed happy in our house. Not at all. They may have started it, but I was going to finish it. You know, everybody was going to be put in their place. This time I was able to mend fences with all three of them, and really, the best part of it from my perspective was that it was on terms that that didn't mean that I was caving in, because that would have been the other default that I would have had in the past. Either I was going to be right and make you do things my way, or I was going to be caving in and caving into your demands or whatever. And so, you know, I even had the chance to spend some time with my oldest before he went off to bed, talking with him a bit, and enjoying his company. And so to be able to make that atmospheric switch in the household from that level of conflict to some level of communication and connection you know, is a very big change in my approach to things. So often in the past, I had no hope. And when I did feel hope, it wasn't for today. It was for some time way off in the future, when hope would arrive. You know, now with the help of the program, with a sponsor, with a loving higher power, I'm able to make mistakes, get into situations that, you know, start to cause me trouble, and realize that I have the tools to make things better. Whether that's stepping out of the situation a bit, thinking about things, being open to allowing God into the circumstance rather than me trying to control things, me trying to force solutions, whether it's this example with my children or in the workplace or in my relationship with my parents or my family or my wife. Being able to not exert control over a situation but allowing God to come into the picture, then hope can return to a hopeless situation, I've found, basically in an instant. And I used to hear people talk about that. And I had no reason to think that that was true, because that had never been my experience, I guess. But now that's starting to be my experience. I guess one other thing to share a little bit with you. I mean, my wife shared recently with me that she was doing some reading and about meditation, and that the miracle in meditation is not that you achieve some sort of great state of being, but that you continue to direct your mind back to greatness every time it wanders off into something else. And I guess I don't have a perfect life, but the miracle for me is that I continue to open my life up to God and do the next appropriate thing, and I have hope that that's enough to make things better. I wanted to also share with you a little bit, a reading out of Hope for Today, that on hope, that I thought kind of encapsulated my thoughts from September 21st. Sometimes as I struggle with the effects of having grown up with the disease of alcoholism, the past seems too difficult to travel. I forget that there are ups and downs to any journey, and I feel overcome with disappointment with my seemingly slow progress. Then my higher power reminds me of a history lesson I once learned, and I regain hope. An expedition on the Grand Canyon traveled along the Colorado River. Halfway through the canyon, the explorers encountered dangerous rapids. Some of the explorers were killed as the thrashing waters hurled about them. The others managed to get ashore, and as they gathered their wits to assess the situation. Although the river ahead looked choppy and menacing, some of the crew decided to forge ahead. They felt they had traveled too far to turn back. The others decided to return home on foot. The explorers who went ahead faced dangerous waters for a short period of time, but the remainder of the journey was safe, calm, and beautiful. Those who turned back actually faced greater dangers, but they did not survive. This story reminds me of how valuable it is to persistently move forward in the program. When the road ahead looks threatening and I want to turn back to my old attitudes and behaviors, I remember that I'm not alone on my path. I have the wisdom of a power greater than myself, the tools of the program, and the experience, strength, and hope of my fellow travelers in Al-Anon to support me. Thought for the day. During bleak periods of my recovery, my higher power reminds me that the best way out is through. And the quote, "Today I will pause at the crossroad and listen for my higher power's voice." I guess for me, that's been the item that gives me hope for today, is the ability, not of myself, to make things better, because that's what I counted on for so many years, and I worked so hard on that, and it made my life unmanageable. But letting God, letting a higher power in through the cracks of light to do for me what I can't do for myself, to do for me what I can't imagine needs to be done for myself to make my life better. Is what gives me hope for today. So, thank you.
Hi, I'm Scott.
Hi, Scott.
I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon as well. A lot of people ask me why I come to Al-Anon, because I don't live in active alcoholism, but I live with six cats, and they're just like six little furry alcoholics, because when they want to be fed, they want it not now, but right now. When they want attention, they're constantly pawing me. And they're out all night, and I have no idea where they've been. And I have a really old Al-Anon light bulb joke. It's like, how many Al-Anon members does it take to screw in a light bulb? And it's like, one, but the light bulb has to want to change. So, hope for today. Well, when I came to Al-Anon, Al-Anon was my last hope. I haven't really met anyone that wanted to come to Al-Anon, per se. And I certainly didn't want to be there. I felt defeated, depressed, and just kind of lost and out of control. So I walked down the 14 steps down to my meeting, and there was a lady there that was smiling at me, and the people were laughing, and somebody said that it seemed odd that they were laughing, and that was my group experience too. They were laughing, and I just felt uncomfortable because I didn't know how to laugh. I'm very serious and a perfectionist, or recovering perfectionist. So when the lady was smiling at me, I didn't trust. I just thought, what do you want from me? Like, you must want something from me. So, but she was just smiling and just welcoming me that day. So when I listened to everybody's story as it went around, I picked up just a little bit of hope from each person that shared. And it was like, that was the first place in my life, in 26 years, that I ever felt at home. It was like, I knew I was home for whatever reason. And I just went back the next week to another meeting. I came into the program not knowing. I thought I might be an atheist, or if there was a God, it was a punishing God, because my life just seemed to reflect that kind of attitude. So somebody challenged me in Al-Anon to find a higher power. They said, you've got to find a higher power, Scott. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a rock, a tree, although they said if they cut the tree down, that might affect your relationship with your higher power. So, or the stars or whatever. Just find something that's greater than yourself. And for me, the meeting was itself my higher power for the longest time, because it was greater than myself. And as I worked on my relationship with my higher power, of my understanding, that's what helped me a lot, because I didn't agree with other people's higher powers. I didn't understand them and didn't quite agree with them. So I found something that I could work with. And it was like, that was a slow development, and I'm still working on that relationship today. But it gave me hope to find that. And I came there and I challenged my God. I was like, okay, if you really exist, show me a sign. So the meeting that I was going to at the time was in this rough neighborhood, and there's lots of traffic coming by the meeting. So I rode my bike there, parked my bike, and at the meeting I just said, okay, God, show me a sign. So I came back out. I had forgotten to lock my bike up, but my bike was still there. And it seems like a really small thing, but to me that day it was a spiritual awakening. It was a life-changing incident for me, because it was like I had asked and I had seen the evidence come before me. So from that point on, it was like, okay, I'm being looked after. I don't always feel like my higher power is there, but I know my higher power is there. So that gave me more hope. Let's see. Steps 1 through 3. People told me about step groups, and I asked about them, and it was like an intensive thing with more people and get to know people. But they said, Scott, take your time. Like, don't rush into it. You know, most people get a year of recovery before they rush into a step group. And just build on your first three steps. Like, I can't, God can, so let him. It's like, okay, all right. So I knew better, because I'm the center of the universe, so I knew things that they didn't. So I went into a step group right away, and oh, I struggled, because when I did my four, when I got to my four, the first three steps I faked my way through as best I could, but when I got to four, it was like each time I discovered something about myself, I used it to beat myself up with. So I was taking hope away from myself. So I eventually had to drop out, because I was just too hard to do that. So I had to let that go, and of course I was trying to do recovery perfectly. So that was a hard thing to do, but nobody judge me for it. They just kind of let me keep coming back to the meetings, and they just kept listening to me and nodding. And if somebody had told me long before Al-Anon that if just sitting in a room and having people listen to me talk, if that was going to change my life, I would not have believed them. I would have thought they were crazy, because I couldn't see something tangible in it. So, but it, it, it has slowly changed me over time. So, let me see what else. Recovery, 4, 1, 2, 3, and 5. My 5. So, when I heard other people talk about the 5, they often went with somebody from the clergy and did their kind of confession-like thing. But I of course, was different, and I had to do it my way. So I had to pick somebody from my group because I had to know if I was a monster. If they listened to my 4 and 5, if they listened to me and they ran away from me, then I would know I was a monster and I would confirm all their beliefs about myself. And so I did it, and the person just listened, and I shared for probably 2.5 hours and cried through a lot of it. And just for the first time, somebody listened to me, and it was like they just related to me. And they're like, when I was done, they just said, "Well, I've heard worse." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So they didn't run out of the room screaming, and we actually had a relationship for probably 10 years and just continued on. So that gave me a lot of hope, because it was like somebody accepted me just for who I was, and there was all kinds of things in my past that I was very ashamed of, but they related to them, and they said, "No, I've done those same things." And it was like, really? It's like, okay, all right. So that gave me, yeah, lots of hope. When I had come to Al-Anon, the reason I came to Al-Anon was because my mom had gone to Al-Anon when I was probably 14 years old. And before that, my mom lived in North Vancouver, and I was in Regina, so we'd go out and see my mom for 2 weeks out of the year. And she lived with these, like the bikers, and there was a party from Thursday night right until Sunday evening. And there were strangers that would roll into town, and there were drugs everywhere. They grew marijuana under an orange tarp in the backyard, so they partied all weekend. There was, like, booze the whole time. And it was a really unsafe place in some respects. But in others, I met a lot of interesting people that could play guitar and sing songs and just improvise. And so there was a lot of creativity out there. But I remembered my mom when she went to Al-Anon. She stopped hanging out with the bikers and that and moved to the Vancouver side, bought a condo, had a really high-paying job, and just changed and matured before my eyes. And I thought, well, you need to go to Al-Anon because you married the alcoholic. I don't need to do that. And 12 years later, when my life was totally unmanageable and out of control, I remembered Al-Anon. So that's why I said Al-Anon was my last hope. So I went to Al-Anon just looking for some kind of hope. I think if I had no hope, I probably would have killed myself long before then, but I was so codependent. When I lived on the farm, I had a little dog that I thought, if I killed myself in the hills, my little dog would carry me back piece by piece to my mom, and I thought, that would be too traumatic. So I could not do that, and I'm grateful. And this is a quote from somebody else in one of the Al-Anon books, but they thanked God for helping them find Al-Anon, and then they thanked Al-Anon for helping them find God. So it's like, okay, I'm not an atheist, as I figured out now after a few years in the program. I'm an agnostic, and at the time I didn't know what agnostic meant, because I'd heard this term before, so I had to look it up in the dictionary. It said, somebody who believes in a power greater than themselves but can't define that. So it's like, all right, I can live with that, even though it's as a power as I understand that power. So there's contradictions, but I mean, I have assumptions about my higher power, that my higher power loves me unconditionally, no matter what. And it's like, okay, that's not really agnosticism, but it's like I can have my own understanding of a higher power. So, I keep coming back to Al-Anon. And because I had to do recovery perfectly, when my group lost its group rep, I had to become group rep, because without me, the group would have failed, and it would have just ended. So, being the center of the universe, I had to jump in and save the group. So, I started coming to assemblies and meeting people, and I've got, like, I came up with Beth, and then I've got my people from Regina that I didn't expect to be here, but they're here, and then I've got my crew from Lloyd, but then I've also got people from all over the province of Saskatchewan that I just see sometimes a couple times a year, sometimes not for years. And then there's just this feeling of safety and comfort that I can just kind of be myself, and I can walk up in bare feet, and I can just hang out. I'm wearing sandals right now. I haven't quite transitioned over to shoes yet. I'm still in a bit of denial over the summer going so quickly. I'm nervous today, and this was a last-minute asking me to speak was a last-minute thing last night. So, other than my cat joke and my light bulb joke, you know, I don't have a lot of humor in there. But that was, yeah, laughter was the thing that I learned to do in Al-Anon. I was so self-centered that I thought everybody would look at me if I laughed. I've got crooked teeth, so I try not to smile too much in public. There's a reading right out of Courage to Change on that exact topic, that I about smiling, and it's like, okay, well, I don't quite have the British teeth I think I have, so it's like, okay, I can smile and laugh. So I learned to laugh going to coffees after the meetings with people, and that was part of becoming who I was, because, like, I'm a shy person. Thank you very much for that 1 minute warning. I'm a shy person, but I really want to be known and just be myself. So that's been my journey in Al-Anon, is learning to be myself, because we all have those hidden talents that are just, yeah, part of who we are. And I'm not into sports and I'm not into cars. I express my feelings and I'm very sensitive. I like watching romantic movies. So I don't fit into the typical guy mode. So Al-Anon has helped me to just be part of who I am, and it's given me a lot of hope every day, and I get the hope from everybody just sharing who they are each day. So I'm grateful to be here. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for the introduction, Richard. When Richard introduced the whole 4x10 thing earlier, you talked about stimulating people coming up here and stimulating him and that kind of stuff, and I thought, oh, I got to get up here and say something about that. There's no way I'm getting up here and stimulating you, Richard. I thought we'd put those rumors to rest a long time ago. And then Richard gets up here and he makes me cry. Hi, I'm Ian. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Ian!
And it's really good to be here. First of all, I just want to thank everybody on the committee for putting this on. I know how much work it takes to put this on. I've been involved in it in the past, and I took a break this year. And it's great to see everybody here. It's great to see the fruit of your labor bring us all together so that we can share in fellowship. And if you can't tell that I'm rattled, then you're not paying much attention. Which is okay. So the theme today is hope for today, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about that for 10 minutes, and I think I have 5 minutes left. I kind of got to Al-Anon in an odd route, I think. I got here because of somebody else's Al-Anonism. But maybe if you're an adult child, you might understand that. I didn't know I was an adult child before I got here. And I didn't know I'd married an adult child. I just knew that I was in a situation that was crazy. I was living a lifestyle that felt unmanageable. And I had these feelings in that relationship that I'd always had all my life, that I always remembered from my childhood, and that were these feelings of feeling lonely, separate, different, sometimes angry, and almost always afraid. And the tools I learned as a child was, when those feelings start showing up, you got to do something about them so that they don't overwhelm you, so that you don't drown in them, so that they don't kill you. So I learned to attach to other people. And like a lot of people in this room, I learned how to read other people's feelings, guess what they wanted, provide for their needs so that I would have a place where I belonged. Because if I could meet your needs, figure out what they were, meet them, you needed me. And I needed you. And that's how I lived. But I didn't know that's how I lived. I didn't understand that about me. And then at one point in my life, I'm in this relationship, I've got these kids, and things just seem to get worse. It just goes from chaotic incident to chaotic incident to chaotic incident. And I'm getting more resentful, and I'm getting angrier, and I don't know why. I don't know why. And then my spouse started coming to Al-Anon, which actually pissed me off at first, because I thought it was my job to take care of her. In fact, that was my role as far as I was concerned. And to see this other person getting something out of Al-Anon that seemed to be restoring her to sanity threatened me. So I started going to meetings. I wanted to see what was going on and participate in it so I could be part of it too and help make it work for her. And that's what got me into Al-Anon. And I first started going to meetings where it was, I'll call it regular Al-Anon for lack of a better word, where it was mostly spouses of alcoholics. And to be honest, I didn't really relate. Sometimes the story about the craziness and the chaos I could relate to. Sometimes the stories about perfection I could relate to. But most of the time I couldn't relate. And then after a while I started to realize these people who talk about growing up in an alcoholic home, I can relate to. I'm not sure why I'm getting teary-eyed at this point, but I do know why. It's because suddenly I found out there were people out there that were just like me, you know, and I didn't know that existed. I found a safe place. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I belonged to something. And I started going to adult children meetings because that's where I heard my story. That's where I found my people, you guys. And at the basis of my disease was this idea that I had a higher power, but I wasn't good enough for it. And no matter what I did, I wasn't going to be good enough. And at the basis of my disease was this idea that I wasn't good enough. And no matter what I did, I wouldn't be good enough. And that led to all kinds of fears of you finding that out about me. And that's how I lived my life, trying to hide not being good enough from you. I really am surprised that I'm reacting like this. This doesn't usually happen to me. Thank you, that helped. I don't know if that's reverse codependence or what. Anyway, the long and the short of it is that in the meetings, I got introduced to a higher power that was different than the God I knew. I started seeing people and hearing people talk about a higher power that they got to define for themselves, the way they wanted to define their higher power. It's like, here's the job requirement. You got to love me unconditionally. Oh, unconditional love? Whoa, what's that? And I discovered in the meetings that that's how you guys related to me. You loved me unconditionally. I didn't have to hide behind that fear that I wasn't good enough anymore. And slowly I began to learn and believe that there was a higher power out there that no matter what I did, loved me, wanted me to be happy. And in the second step it says that he would restore me to sanity. And what I heard from that was he would restore me to what he intended me to be. Once I had a higher power that I found I could trust, I started to love myself. And that changed everything. Once I could love myself, I no longer needed to use you to make me feel okay. I could feel okay regardless of what you did. Sometimes I didn't like it, but I could work through it. And those fears that I had, well, they were still there, and they're still there with me today, and I'm sitting here shaking up here and talking to you guys, but the fears became no longer a barrier, something you couldn't get through, but just a hindrance, or a wall, or a bit of a maze that I had to work my way through. So I got here hopeless, and feeling helpless, and not knowing where I was going to go, and not thinking I was good enough. And what I found here was that I'm good enough just the way I am, that I can accept myself. And now that I can accept myself, I can start working on those defects of character. Right? And I can love you unconditionally, without strings attached. I can be in meaningful relationships where it's with equal people, where I give out of abundance. I give out of this feeling I want to give back. I'm not giving in the sense of, here, you can have this, but I want something else in return. I'm giving freely. And I have hope. Even when it's bad, at the back of my head, I have this sense that it's going to be okay because my higher power is with me. And I'm okay just the way I am. My circumstances I might not like, but I'm going to be okay. And I'll just close by saying, I used to really fear dying. It was something I didn't want to think about, but that idea of being abandoned and alone forever was a big part of that. And now I don't fear that anymore, because whenever it happens, I hope I'm still active in program, because I want to see all of you there. And I heard somebody else share this idea of having a pine box and a whole bunch of markers and asking all of you guys to come up and write somewhere. I'm just really grateful to be part of this family, to be okay. I look okay, right? And I'm really grateful that I can sit up here and cry, and it's okay. I love you guys, and I'm really grateful that you love me. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Ruthanne, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Ruthanne!
I was going to say, my name's Ruthanne! Oh, it's so good to be here, to be back here. I wasn't able to get here last year, so it's really, really good to be back here again this year. This was kind of a fairly spontaneous decision that we made to actually come. The idea surfaced last Friday, and Valerie said she'd been communicating with Richard, and that, you know, we could register right at the door or whatever. And so then Wednesday we kind of made the decision, and everything lined up, and our higher power organized everything so that we could come. And so we made the decision to come. And Wednesday night I was sitting there glued to the TV, and the phone rang. And I saw it was Richard's number. So I answered the phone, and it was Richard, and he asked me to speak. And I think fairly quickly I responded that I would. And my next thought was, I'm going to kick Val's. Yeah, because apparently Val had told Richard we were coming. Give him the heads up. Anyway, thanks for asking me to share, Richard. Scotty, I have 12 cats and 2 dogs, so I'm thinking I have 12 furry alcoholics and 2 furry codependents. So, and I'm more of a cat person when it comes down to it, and boy, I sure know that. Like I say, I know right away when someone's an alcoholic because I'm attracted to them instantly. So when Richard told me that the topic was hope for today, it got me to thinking, what is hope? I know what it feels like, but I don't know how to explain it to someone else. I thought about this. If someone asked me what is hope, do I know how to explain it? And I was thinking, I do a lot of thinking in bed at night when I should be sleeping, but anyway, and sometimes I have to, when I have a thought, I have to get up and write it down. So anyway, I was thinking about, you know, the if God is good, orderly direction, and halt is hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I thought, what is hope? And I came up with, hope is higher power opens possibilities endlessly. So I wrote that down. I thought, well, there's a start, right? But anyway, the next day I was thinking further on about hope and what it actually meant. And so I actually looked it up in the Oxford Concise Dictionary, which describes hope as a feeling of expectation and desire, a feeling of trust, to intend, if possible, to do something. But what does hope mean to me? As a child growing up in a home affected by alcoholism, I didn't know hope, but I sure knew hopelessness. And I remember plans being, you know, plans and hopes and dreams just constantly being dashed. My mom would always, we would have a plan, and my mom would always say, well, don't bring that up if your dad comes home drinking, and don't say that if he's drinking. And so we were taught, don't think, don't speak, don't feel, basically, as is very common with children of alcoholics. And I learned quickly it wasn't safe to hope. It wasn't safe. I would get excited about plans, and they'd be canceled. And so pretty soon I just learned it was easier just not to get excited. It was safer not to care, not to hope, not to care. And when I look back on it, I can see how that protected me when I was a child. It protected me from disappointment. It served me well when I was a child. And actually, today when I think about it, I am thankful because that hopelessness is what brought me to the doors of Al-Anon. And I've heard it said that the best hope is the very admission of hopelessness. And I believe this to be true. When I think about step one, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, to me, taking this step is an admission of hopelessness. In giving up, therein lies the hope. Step two, came to believe the power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. This step speaks to me of hope. It tells me that recovery is possible, that there is help, and there is hope for sanity and serenity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a God as we understood him. For me, hope is directly related to willingness. For me, I find the more willing I am, the more hope I have. I try to practice step 11 every day. And part of that for me is praying for willingness. I ask God for knowledge of his will for me and power to carry that out. But I also ask for a willingness. Because for me that is a big thing. And I ask for God to take away the defects that stand in the way of my willingness. And some of the defects I have are arrogance, ego, pride, anger, resentment, complacency, fear, perfectionism. I love it. I'm a recovering perfectionist. I love that. I need these things to be removed because I know they are standing in my way, standing in my way of willingness to do God's will. And I pray for that on a daily basis. I try to pray for that on a daily basis. Do I do it every day? No, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't. I'm human and I am unperfect. I know that as much as I try, I am unperfect. But what I find is when I pray for willingness, I have a day that is filled with hope and serenity, and peace, and happiness. And when I don't ask for this willingness, I have a day that is sad and hopeless and frustrating and overwhelming. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence anymore since coming to Al-Anon. When I look back at the dictionary definition of hope, and I looked at steps 2 and 3, I noticed a few things. Step two, came to believe. The dictionary definition of hope, a feeling of expectation. Step two, that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The dictionary goes on to describe a feeling of trust. Step three, made a decision. The dictionary defines to intend, if possible, to do something. I think our co-founders really knew what they were doing. I'm amazed at how these steps were written. The message we carry in Al-Anon is hope. When I was a newcomer and I was attending my first meeting, that was the one thing I could feel. I could feel in the room was hope. I came away from that room feeling hope for the first time in a long time. It was the hope from the members that kept me coming back. It was that hope. Sorry, I'm nervous tonight. So today, many years later, I've been in the program a few days. When I see newcomers come through the doors of Al-Anon who are feeling hopeless, like I once was, I feel hope. And it makes me aware of how important newcomers are. And I feel like we are as necessary to them as they are to us. Newcomers are a huge part of my recovery and my hope. I always am in awe when I watch a newcomer come, and just how the hope increases from meeting to meeting is just amazing to me. I know that as long as I have this program, I will always have hope. As long as I have the members in this room, I will continue to have hope. As long as we can keep attracting newcomers, then we will have hope in this program. So, I just feel sorry, I'm really nervous. I guess my hope for today is that this program is going to be here for generations to come, so that we have this beautiful program. Thank you.